Mike, this guy, he grew up in Little Rock, and his last name is Spellshouse. And he's got two boys, and I met his son, the oldest son, when he was working at TGI Fridays in Conway, Arkansas. And Janet and I periodically will go to Conway and on a weekend go up to a pet store up there, and we stop at TGI Fridays and have lunch. And I met this guy as a his son as a waiter there, and came to find out that he was at Baptist College up in Conway and was studying for the ministry. And we struck up a conversation, and he found out as a pastor, and he gave me a CD of his dad. And that's his dad, and his dad moved from Little Rock, chasing a dream many years ago, moved to the Nashville area. And this guy has tried to make it in the music industry, and God has not let him do it, brother.
And our business.
Yeah, and he's he's singing in churches and that kind of stuff, and doing a little concert now and then. Now his son's moved up there and is a youth minister in a church up in the Nashville area, and they do a ministry together where they'll go out to a church, and he wrote a song called The Prodigal Son, and it was about this son many, many years ago. And so they give their testimony and that kind of stuff, but I love the guy's voice, and he sent me, I've interviewed him on one occasion, and he sent me a couple of CDs, and I get to play them, and I just love the music, man.
He's got a great voice.
Yeah, sure does. Hey, well, look, it's 9 o'clock straight up. Let me start my recording, buddy.
Okay.
Okay, friends, this is the Dr. Jim Talk Show on a Monday morning at 9 o'clock, and we've got our friend Pastor Mike Smith from Country Bible Church in Brenham, Texas. And good morning, Mike, sir.
Good morning to you. It's a wonderful day here.
Oh, yes, and it's a wonderful day here. The news isn't good, but it's a great day in the Lord. I'll tell you what, when the battle heats up, the hotter the battle, the greater the grace, isn't it?
Well, we've got the victory already, so we don't have to be depressed.
There you go. Oh, I'll tell you what, Mike, that's so good, and I wish more Christians understood that, but they're struggling out there. But look, let's start the program the same way we normally start it. Why don't you give our folks about a 15-second time or so to rebound? We try to keep short accounts around here, so we'll give them about 15 seconds and let you pray, and we'll see where we're going to go with all this.
Sounds great.
Okay.
Heavenly Father, we thank you for giving us another day of your grace. We can always count on your grace. We're so thankful that you are omnipotent. There's mm-hmm. nothing that's too hard for you, and that you're omniscient. There's nothing that you don't know. We pray that you'll help us to remember that as we get involved in all the machinations of man, mm-hmm. all the scheming and all the lies and deceptions that swirl around us, and that we will be calm in our soul and know that you are with us. We pray that you'll help us to have our minds open today, and that we'll be objective as we look for solutions to the problems that face us, and that we will not be undone, but indeed will continue to look to you for guidance. And we pray this in Christ's name. Amen.
Amen. Mike, before we get into your document here, I want to ask you a favor, and then you don't have to answer it on the air because you might want to say no, but I'm about to finish chapter 4 of your book, Romans 13, 1 through 7, and I probably will finish it in the first session next Sunday morning. And I'm wondering if you would allow me then to go back and to pick up on the preface and the introduction of your book to continue that study in your book. I'm asking you that favor, and you don't have to answer it right now. We'll get it in an email or future phone call, but I'm interested in maybe going back and picking up the preface and the introduction, maybe even going on from there.
Well, no, I don't have to think about it. You have my permission. Oh. I just would rather not have any notes sent out on it now, because I'm still making changes, and
yes,
rather them have when they get the written part of the finished product.
Yeah, well, Mike, I'd like to maybe make an announcement here, and that is I've got people asking me for my notes, and while I'm teaching through your book, I would prefer not to send those notes out.
Yeah,
and so
I'm in harmony with you.
Yeah, so the people who may be asking me for the notes on my Sunday morning service regarding your book, I will not send them out because you may want to edit them, change them, do whatever you want to do. So from that standpoint, if you're out there in the listening world and you're asking me for my notes, don't ask any more for those notes. That's what I'm doing on Sunday. You can ask me for others, but not for those, okay? And we'll wait for Mike's book to come out, and you can get that at that point in time.
That will be more incentive, not that I need it, but to get this book completed. It's just longer, much longer than I thought it would take to
yes.
Do the editing process. And I want to warn everyone ahead of time that I have a bad allergy today. And there might be times that I have to mute the phone to sneeze or clear my throat.
Yep.
And my sniffing, I'm going to try my best not to have that be a distraction.
Well, I tell you what, you and I got the same problem, brother.
Oh, yeah?
both of my nostrils are tighter than a drum. And
that's the way mine.
Yeah, just absolutely tired and drunk. And sometimes, Mike, I'll hold my changer. I've got a changer here that'll press this button and it goes to a channel 2 and it shuts the video off.
Oh.
Well, if I've got to blow my nose or cough or something like that, I'll take the video and shut it down and hold up this changer here to let them know what's going on, but I don't let them see what's happening back here in the studio.
Don't forget to give them your cell phone number.
Yes, I'll do. Oh, thank you so much. Well, let's do that right now. The cell phone number is 501-944-1678. 501-944-1678. And if you happen to have a question that you want to ask, hey, don't hesitate to ask. And Mike, listen, let me just thank you for your service yesterday morning. Many people might have been looking for, you know, the gospel and the stars, however you label that, but I'm telling you what, the encouragement that came from that service yesterday morning, a whole hour of encouragement to your congregation and those listening from around the world and will listen off of iTunes, I'll tell you, I applaud you for following the leadership of the Spirit in changing your message yesterday morning to give us that encouragement.
Well, I firmly believe that when the Lord puts a burden in a pastor's heart for whatever it may be, that you need to follow that. And I'm so thankful that he designed the local church the way he did.
Mm, yes.
We're not under a hierarchy that we have to follow some schedule. And
yes.
It would just kill the Spirit working in that way. So
yeah.
That's what I had in mind.
You know, and you made a comment yesterday morning, and I've seen it happen in my own life. You stay up half the night making sure you got your notes ready for the next day, and about 30 minutes before you go to the pulpit, God said, that's not what I want you to talk about. I want you to talk about this. And then you end up spending an hour or an hour and 15 minutes, whatever it is, talking about that, and you think, what if I run out of gas? And you just don't run out of gas. It just keeps going and going and going until you finally finish. And I sure do applaud you, my brother. That was a great message yesterday.
Well, thank you. And I want to say something about your message.
Oh,
this is going to sound like we have a mutual admiration.
Oh, hey, how about that? Okay.
But most of what my message yesterday was about was people who miss out because they talk themselves out of something that's really going to bless them, something that's going to maybe make a big difference in their life. And every time you've been on my book and you've been using it as a guideline.
Yes, sir.
I'm not touting my book here, but you just the commentary you have and the way you express it and the things that you bring in are just phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would encourage all the listeners, if you haven't heard it, you can get it on the iTunes.
Yes.
And tell other people, and I would suggest that they tell them you're missing out. Just tell them this is so phenomenal. You don't get this just anywhere.
Mm.
And for them not only to make an effort, to make it a priority for Sunday mornings to listen to that, but also tell other people.
Yeah.
If it's moving you as it has moved me,
mm.
how can you not tell people
mm.
that this is tremendous?
Yeah.
You're missing out if you don't have it. So that's yeah. my plug for you.
Yeah.
Really,
well, Mike, thank you so much, and I appreciate that. But I'll tell you what, if I didn't believe that the work that you have done in this book, and probably going to do some more before you get it finished. If I didn't believe in it, brother, I'll tell you what, I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. But I'm telling you, I can't wait. I can't wait for Sunday morning to get here in order to share this information, because I think it's probably the most important information that we can share today. Obviously, we have an ambassadorship. We have the Ministry of Reconciliation. I still preach the gospel. I teach the gospel. I witness the gospel. But good grief, when the ship's going down, brother, you need to nail the issue as to what the problem is. And so I don't think that my responsibility is to save the United States of America, but I'll tell you what, our freedom is dissipating, and that's important, I think, to all of us. So thank you so much, and let me make one other comment. Rolly Delgado will be with me again this coming Thursday. And he's not an atheist, but he claims to be an agnostic. We had a great meeting with him two Thursdays ago, and we'll have him back on again this coming Thursday. We'll be talking more about his religious view, and my desire is for you to know what's going on out there in the world. What is it we're up against, or what is it we're dealing with? So I'll have him on this coming Thursday. We'll be talking about his religious view, his political view, and eventually why did he get involved in cage fighting, kickboxing as a profession. So,
I'd like to add one thing to
yes,
that.
Yes, sir.
Not only is the interview with him I just hang on every word, but it's also so informative, because we don't have a chance to witness to an agnostic or an atheist
yes.
too often.
Mm-hmm.
At least I don't.
Yeah, I understand.
Most people say, well, yes, they believe in God or they believe in Jesus. But to have someone honest enough to say, well, no, I'm not sure if there's a God, or
yeah.
I don't believe there's a God. And Rolly is no dummy. He's
yeah.
articulate. He knows quite a bit about a lot of areas. I was just floored when he made a distinction about what James says
yes.
and what Paul says
yes, right.
regarding the gospel. So
yeah.
And if you want to learn how to talk to someone, how to make them feel at ease. You don't want to just go for the throat. Strike up a rapport with them.
Yeah.
And then listen to them tell you what they believe and why they believe
mm-hmm.
it. This past weekend, I went to Austin Bible Church to a conference there. A phenomenal conference.
Uh-huh.
I just can't say enough about their church and the people there. And one of the things that I was on Friday. One of the things that I even put up on the PowerPoint was that when we give the gospel, it shouldn't be a presentation, it should be a conversation. And I think so many believers
yeah.
do the wrong thing by just, they do all the talking, they don't know anything about the other person.
Yep.
And it was actually a learning experience for anyone who was listening to you interview Rolly last time as to how to handle that situation. And I'm sure it's going to be the same thing this Thursday,
mm-hmm.
so I would encourage everyone to tune in as well.
Well, okay, buddy, I sure do. Thank you. And that'll be this coming Thursday at 9 o'clock. So enough for the advertisement and the preliminaries. Why don't we go ahead and let you start? We're in Chapter 2, and I want you to go ahead and start whatever introduces whatever you way you want to, but I think we're at the paragraph upon an average five of our citizens, etc. So you just pick up and take off for where you want to go.
Okay. Well, I wanted to finish the last. There's just one last paragraph before we started upon the average of five of our citizens.
Okay.
Dr. David Ramsey was a field surgeon during popularly known as the American Revolution. I don't believe it was a revolution. I like to call it the First War of Independence.
Yes.
And he made an oration, I think it was 18 years after the Declaration of Independence was signed. And what he's doing is contrasting here in this part the wonderful blessings that the colonists had once they won their freedom, as opposed to what was going on in Europe, and specifically regarding how one man could take the whole country into war. And he's explained how this has just been a horror in Europe, how thousands of men are killed, and the cost in gold and silver regarding war. And he is explaining how wonderful it is that the colonists don't have to have that burden because of our Constitution. And I'll just pick it up right there.
Okay.
He says the founders knew well the horrible suffering and financial ruin that occurs when one man has the power to thrust a nation into war.
Mm-hmm.
That is why Article 1, Section 8, referring to our Constitution, was included, which requires a declaration of war from Congress before going to war. And that seems like it might be somewhat innocuous. Okay, you've got a Article 1, Section 8. Actually, it's just one line in there, but that one line is so important.
Mm-hmm.
And we have suffered as a nation it's incalculable to figure out the cost that we have paid as a nation because we no longer follow the Constitution and we have ignored Article 1, Section 8, which says that we are not to go to war without a declaration of war from the Congress.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've talked about this a little bit before, that World War II was the last time that this nation made a declaration of war,
yeah.
And it was against Japan. And so then we had Korea, we had the Vietnam War, we had Gulf Storm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We had the Iraqi War. We're now engaged in the what is it now? Is it it's over a decade, 11 or 12 years,
yes,
that we've been in Afghanistan. And if you could just add up how many people, how many Americans were killed, how many were horribly wounded,
mm-hmm.
and the cost in treasure, the I'm sure trillions of dollars, all because we don't follow that one line in the Constitution. And
mm-hmm.
I would just like to emphasize how important that is, because when you ignore it, you're no longer under the rule of law, and you have, in our case, one man, our president, can take us to war, and that's what's happened, not just with the present one, but the one before. And George Bush the First, the father, that rather than going to Congress for a declaration of war, went to the United Nations in order to get permission to go to war against Iraq when they were going to invade Kuwait.
Mm-hmm.
And the nation now has in their mind, because people don't know the Constitution, they don't know their Bible, have been programmed into thinking, well, this is the way it is, and this is just the way we operate these days. And this one little part here just emphasizes how important it is that we go by the Bible and we go by the Constitution.
Yes.
So, this is, again, Dr. Ramsey is about to conclude his oration. There's only a few more paragraphs.
Mm-hmm.
Upon an average, 5 of our citizens do not pay as much to the support of government as one European subject. The whole sum expended in administering the public affairs of the United States is not equal to 1/4 part of what is annually spent in supporting one crowned head in Europe. And again, Europe was operating and continued to operate without a constitution as ours. And the fundamental difference is that we recognize that our rights come from God.
Yes.
And I don't know of any country in Europe, and indeed I don't know of any around the world, that has it codified
mm-hmm.
in the highest law of the land, which is in our country is the Constitution, that is formulated with that principle in mind. And the Declaration of Independence, of course. He goes on, in these states, property and personal rights are well secured. time would fail to enumerate all the superior advantages our citizens enjoy under that free government to which independence gave birth. He's talking about the colonies here.
Yes.
Sovereignty rests in ourselves. Listen to that.
Boy, that's, yes, stop and say, yes, stop and say that again, Mike. I mean, you know, I find quite often that I will be teaching along, and even people have my notes in their hand. I will be sharing those thoughts, and it'll be such a magnificent statement, and all you're doing, you know, you state it, and you think people are getting it, and you move on. Man, I'll tell you what, need to come back and say that again, because that, listen, this statement right here is worth making one more time and shutting down. Don't do any more for the rest of the hour. Just sit silent because of the power of that statement, Mike.
Absolutely. I mean, this just the first four words
are
so powerful. The whole sentence is tremendous.
Yes.
But it just when I read that, it just hit me because it's so foreign to how people in our country today think of themselves.
Yes. Uh-huh.
We're no longer independent-minded. We no longer think of ourselves as sovereigns and the government, government officials as being our servants. That is totally foreign. It's
yes.
Upside down. So I'll go ahead and read that again.
Yeah, please.
This whole part is tremendous.
Yes.
Sovereignty rests in ourselves. And instead of receiving the privileges of free citizens as a boon, that means favor, from the hands of our rulers, we defined their powers by a constitution of our own framing, which prescribes to them that thus far they may go, but no farther. And all power, not thus expressly delegated, that is, to the federal government, is retained, meaning by the states and the people themselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. And you know, Mike, one of the things that bothers me greatly today is that we've got people that are making a statement. It sounds good, but I don't think it's necessarily correct. I hear people saying today, we need to get back to the Constitution. We need to get back to the Constitution. We need to get back to the Constitution. Well, what they don't understand or what they're not realizing is that Obama, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, the Democrats, those who believe in the political philosophy of progressivism, they're telling us that they are interpreting the Constitution and we're living by the Constitution, when in fact we don't need to get back to the Constitution. We need to get back to the Constitution as given to us by our founding fathers.
Well, I agree with Mark Levine in this regard. He says we're living in a post-constitutional era.
Absolutely.
And even though everyone knows, well, I assume that everyone knows, I guess I can't even say that anymore, that we have a Constitution, and that the Constitution in the body of the document itself says that it's the highest law in the land.
Uh-huh.
And even though every person that is in government, from the soldier all the way to the president, takes an oath, a solemn oath,
yes,
to uphold and defend the Constitution, you don't have to be a brain surgeon to recognize that I'm not including soldiers in this.
Yes.
But I am including politicians.
Uh-huh.
Ignore the Constitution.
Absolutely.
Now, let me ask you, what does that make them? It makes them liars, does it not? Every time they pass a vote that is unconstitutional, after they have given that oath, that makes them, I think, worse than liars, because it's not like they're just telling a lie. They're demonstrating they have no character. They're demonstrating they can put their hand on the Bible and raise their hand and swear to God in front of the whole nation. They're going to uphold and live by this document. And then when they do not, that in itself demonstrates that we are in a post constitutional era, because the people are not holding them accountable.
Yes.
And what's appalling to me is how politicians that break their oath of office, that operate within the bounds of Washington, D.C., whatever that is, and which essentially
yes.
means they can do whatever they can get by with.
Yes.
And when that carries on, the people allow them to do it, which they keep reelecting them.
Yes.
People, you know, the public has a very short memory. Just like, I'll give you an illustration. Right now, the Republicans who voted along to let's keep the nation going, you know, the government, all this fiasco that went on, and they did not stand by the Constitution. That whenever they get whenever their term is up, some of them, I guess, it's going to be maybe 4 or 5 years. They've been, you know, the term for a senator is 6 years. Well, it doesn't have to be that long. It could just be 1 year from now, and all that's in the past. And when they go to run for office, they have the media on their side, and they have
yeah.
scads of money to put their name before the people and tell all these lies that they're there for freedom and they're for getting us all our rights and all this, which is, just look at their voting record. It would tell you different.
Uh-huh.
And the people continue to vote them in.
Yeah.
Would you agree that's how...
Oh, absolutely, Mike. And I believe that Mark Levin is right again where he says we need to repeal the 16th Amendment the 16th Amendment indicates that the senators are going to be elected by the populace out here, where in fact if we simply went back to the original Constitution and appointed senators from the Senate of our state government, listen, we could get them out of office in a New York minute by voting in the state Senate to bring them back home.
Well, I have a part in the book that I'm talking about how can we trust government, and of course we cannot. And one way we can tell is the horrendous amendments to the Constitution that have been made, and it's just my own personal opinion. I think the 14th Amendment was the most dastardly, horrible thing that ever happened to this country, and I think it's even worse than the 17th, and the 17th was devastating. So I would like to see the 14th, the 16th, and the 17th Amendment. The 16th was an income tax. And the 17th was senator, but the 14th. Anyway, I don't want to get all, you know, too deep into that, but I agree with you that this people need to wake up. And I guess more than anything, one reason I wrote the book, and this is what I'm continuing to strive to do, is to help the average American out there recognize that before anything is going to change, his and her thinking has to change.
Absolutely.
And for that thinking to change, they need information.
Yeah.
They need to be told something other than all the lies that they get from the media and politicians.
Yeah.
And the two sources that we have that are available to every person out there and in this country is, number one, we have the Bible, and number two, we have the Constitution.
Absolutely.
And one reason that we are about to go down the drain is because people are ignorant of both.
Yes.
And it's, especially, and I'm not just talking about somebody that is not interested. There's a lot of Christians out there that they recognize something is horribly wrong and they want to do something about it. And I'm saying the first step is knowledge. Find out what the Bible has to say. And in my book, I go, I don't know, I have scads of scriptures to demonstrate what the Bible has to say about the very issues that we're facing. They're not being taught by the pulpit. The people don't know them. And once information frees your mind, and once you understand that God has given you these rights, He's addressed these particular issues, then it emboldens a person. Oh, the Bible doesn't tell me that I have to submit to government no matter what? Wow, it's just like getting out of jail or something. It's so freeing.
Yeah,
So,
Mike, you know, When we look at Christendom today, and I think we need to be, our American public needs to be aware of the fact that there is such a thing as Christendom. And within Christendom, there is that nucleus of people. The Colonel called it a pivot. But there is this pivot. And I can't, it's amazing to me how many Christians can't get out of the Old Testament. Or they can't get out of the red letters. Man, if Jesus said it, this is gospel. And the truth of the matter is that people who are following the red letters of the King James Version are some of the most confused people in the world because they're not making a dispensational distinction. So here again, I think that the moral slide in our country lays at the feet of the pulpit.
They all go together.
Yes.
Arrogance and ignorance and indifference, all those are married together.
Yeah, yeah.
And people simply, they think that they're informed because they're listening to the news or they're getting programs on TV.
Yeah.
They don't realize that they're not being informed, they're being programmed.
Mm-hmm.
And the only cure, the only real defense against that is knowledge. And I'm not talking about just superior intellect, I'm just talking about what every believer should know, which is their Bible and their Constitution.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So let me read that paragraph one more time. I think
it's worth reading
that again. Sovereignty rests in ourselves, and instead of receiving the privileges of free citizens as a boon, which means favor,
mm-hmm.
from the hands of our rulers, we defined their powers by a constitution of our own framing, which prescribed to them that thus far they may go, but no farther. All power, not thus expressly delegated, that means to the federal government, is retained by the states and the people themselves.
Yeah.
Ramsey refers to the 10th Amendment. This is, you know as well as I do, that's exactly what he had in mind when he was stating this.
Uh-huh.
So I say that Ramsey was referring to the 10th Amendment, to the Constitution that keeps the federal government from overstepping its authority and from forcing its will on the state and the people.
Mm-hmm.
Several states today believe the federal government has no constitutional authority to force Obamacare on them and are passing laws prohibiting its implementation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know where that is right now. I just gave this as an example that the people don't want it, and I don't know where the status is. You know, this was being talked about quite a bit a month ago, but I don't hear so much about that right now, and I don't... Do you know what's happened to that?
No, I have no idea, no.
I mean, if the governors of... Even if one governor would stand up and say, this law is unconstitutional, and we are not in a system where the federal government is superior... Even people don't. What's going through my mind right now is, and Gary tells me sometimes, you know, you don't finish your sentence. You need to finish your sentence. I guess I better finish my sentence.
Okay.
But I have another thought coming in that just kind of supersedes. First of all, I'll finish my sentence.
Do it.
There's so many people that don't realize that our states originally were sovereign, and we should be sovereign as well. But that's not the way we operate. And one reason is the 14th Amendment. When we get to that in the book about the 14th Amendment, how horrible.
Yeah.
It just turned everything upside down. So now we have the federal government dictating to the state.
Yeah.
It's actually the creature dictating to the creator.
Yes, yes.
And so now we have and by the way, that's what both the Ninth, but specifically here, the 10th Amendment defended the individual from.
Yeah.
And we need what's called interposition, where we have the leaders of our states, the governors and the representatives, Congress and so forth, be a buffer to stand in between us to defend us from an overreaching federal government.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they have... They have the law right here. They have everything they need is to simply say Obamacare is unconstitutional, and it's not specifically stated in the Constitution that you're able to do this, and we will not follow it because you're not sovereign.
Yeah.
You have the Constitution does not give you that power over us, and you can make all the laws you want to, but unless they're constitutional, We're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Now, I know there's going to be an argument. Well, this Obamacare went to the Supreme Court and shown that it is constitutional. Well, I beg to differ with you. Just because we have a extremely liberal, progressive judges, and the Chief Judge Roberts, that this is my own opinion. I think he was a Judas. I think that he turned, and I don't know for what reason, but anyway, just because the Supreme Court says it's constitutional, the average person has a brain, and they can see that it, show me in the Constitution where Obamacare is mentioned.
Yeah.
Now, they can go through all the contrivances and legal hurdles and magic that they come up with. Well, that the average man knows it. No, this is not constitutional.
Yeah.
And I would love to see governors all across the country say, use the 10th Amendment and say, we're not going to do it.
Yes, Yeah, well, you know, I think Mark Levin had an answer for this also, if I remember correctly, and that was that if the Supreme Court made a decision, that the Congress could override that. And I think that's one of his... one of his amendments to the Constitution that would allow that to happen.
Well, I believe that in this point in time in our history, I think the executive branch has gone out of control.
Absolutely, yes.
And I think that the Supreme Court, which is, you have the president who chooses the Supreme Court, the judges of the Supreme Court, and of course the Congress has to approve it.
Yes.
But everything is about partisanship now. It doesn't matter what the person that is considered for the Supreme Court, what their views are. If it's a Democratic president, and you have a majority of Democrats in the Congress, then they're going to approve whoever it is.
Sure.
You could have Mickey Mouse up there. It doesn't matter who it is. They're going to approve of it. And then you have, and listen, it goes back to information. If the people out there knew the background and the voting record for the members of the Supreme Court, they would be appalled. Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yes.
Anyway...
Well, you know, before you go on, I want to deviate for just a minute. This is an aside, and it has nothing to do with what we're talking about here, but it's something that I've got on my mind that I'd like for you to explain or at least comment on. And while I was listening to your wonderful message, you made a comment that I didn't quite understand, and I'd like for you to explain it. What is an orange liver?
An orange liver is one of those things that pop in my mind when
I see
a real contrast there.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, that's one of those illustrations off the top of my head.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, I've got some of those too, but I want to make sure that I wasn't missing something with this orange liver deal.
No.
Okay, buddy. Back to our thoughts.
Yeah. Anyway, just because the Supreme Court says it's constitutional is not the final word. And I think just as the executive branch, I think, is way over the top, has way too much control, and the judicial branch now, and I have this in my book as well, has taken on the task of legislating, and the Congress, I believe, are emasculated. I believe that they have become so inept that, and so partisan, that they allow both branches, the executive and the judicial, to get by with murder. And when that happens, we wind up with the mess we have today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you rightly said, the Congress can have control over the Supreme Court. They can over the way that the the Supreme Courts and the judges, their districts, they can even, I'm not sure, someone could maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they can impeach these judges. I know that they're in for life.
Yeah.
But maybe I'll not say that, but I'm thinking that they can. They have. Yeah. I know the founders had to have some type of control over the Supreme Court, because and I know it resides in the Congress, but the Congress isn't. They aren't doing their job. But when that isn't happening, when you have a federal government that is essentially imperialistic and overbearing, that's why the Tenth Amendment was written, is to show that the states are still sovereign, and the federal government only has a limited, very specific things that are enumerated that they can do in the Constitution, and they can't constitutionally, they can't do anything outside that boundary. And so we do have the states, and what the 10th Amendment says is, I'm going to paraphrase it in words that people can, I think, understand the easiest.
Yes.
And that is that the federal government has these restrictions and these restraints, and any time that they step out of that boundary, whenever they step out of the restrictions that are given in the Constitution, then the laws they pass, the dictates they give, are essentially null and void, because all power reside in the states and the people.
Yes.
Outside of these few enumerated things that the Constitution specifically grant to the federal government.
Yes,
so
yes.
These governors should be emboldened. They should be able to protect. It was designed to protect the states and the people. But today, just like the Congress, I think we have a bunch of wimpy governors and a lot of people, representatives and senators in the states, that are tainted with this the way that the government is operating now, and they're not going back to the Constitution, and that's one reason that we're in the situation we're in.
Mike, let me ask you a question. It's something that I've been wrestling with for quite some time, and that is when we talk about partisanship, and I understand what is happening in Congress, where we're talking about partisanship. We're following a party line. If you're a Republican, you're following a party line. If you're a Democrat. But when the bottom line is drawn, when we're talking about political parties, the we ought to be electing people who are going to go to Congress to protect the freedoms of our people. Are inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They're not.
Excuse me, but that is their job. That's
exactly right. So that's their job. And whether they're a Democrat or a Republican wouldn't make any difference. They're there to protect our freedoms. But what has happened over a period of time, we've come up with a two-party system here, where the Republicans at one time were demonstrating the conservative side. They were for the freedoms and limited government. And the Democrats, sort of the bleeding heart kind of an idea that was injected into this, where government is going to do something for people that really we ought to be doing for ourselves. Now my question is this. If in fact, we've got a two-party system, and one party is supposed to be representing limited government, according to the Constitution, and protecting our freedoms, and you've got this other party out there that's doing whatever it ought to do. My question, when it comes to legislation then, why should there not be a partisanship where the Republicans, representing limited government and freedom for our people, why should they compromise on anything, period, over and out?
Well, my thoughts on that
okay.
is if what you described, if they were operating that way,
yes,
I would agree with you, but
absolutely.
From my perspective,
okay,
neither one of them are doing what they're supposed
absolutely.
To. I mean, I've I don't know whether I should say it this way, but I think that the Republicans have become Democrats light.
Absolutely.
Like light beer, we got it.
Absolutely.
And the American people know that.
Yeah.
That's why 60% of them said, let's throw all of them out.
Well, there's, you know, Mike, I think there's a reason why they have become like that. My friend Al Rosenblum, and I don't know whether you've ever heard Al or not or know who he is.
Yes, I've heard him a couple of times.
Okay.
Give a message back when you still had the
the
video.
Yes, sir.
And I just I've never met Al, but
okay.
He seems like my kind of guy.
Well,
he had that ball cap on. And
yeah, uh-huh.
A lot of people think that you have to look dignified to be a man of the cloth.
Oh.
And I'm so much it appears like Al. I like to wear ball caps, and when I go to town, I'm got my jeans on or sandals or whatever. But he is a very intelligent man. I think we can learn a lot from him.
Well, the thing that I like about him is that he is doctrinally sound, and you know he's studying the Colonel also, but he went back to college and has a master's degree in psychology, and what he's been able to do is to weld the world psychology with the Bible and where the biblical influence is strong and not psychology telling what the Bible is supposed to mean. He's welded these two things together, and he makes a statement, and I agree wholeheartedly, that when you take a look at every human being, totally depraved individual, unbeliever, that what happens is we've got a trend toward asceticism or a trend toward lasciviousness. And what he's indicating is that when you are under the influence of the old sin nature, what happens is one of two things, or both really. We pursue pleasure and try to prevent pain. Pursue pleasure and try to prevent pain. Well, what happens is, well, you've got all these folks out here in the United States that are unbelievers and or carnal Christians that are under the influence of their sinful nature. What they're doing is they're trying to prevent pain in one area, and guess what they'll do? If the government will give to me what I don't have to go out and work for, I'd much rather have it that way, to prevent the pain of having to go to work. So I think it's pretty easy for us to explain biblically why we've got these folks that are actually voting for and putting back in office these same people because they've got a gimme attitude, and these people are being reelected because they will give to the people to get the vote. Now, that's my take on the whole thing.
Well, you know, it's right on target. There was a pundit, I'm not sure, I think it may have been Thomas Sowell.
Okay.
But I'm not absolutely certain. And before the 2012 election, he came out and said, you don't have to wonder who is going to get elected, and this is probably at least 6 months before the election. He said, you don't have to wonder because Obama is going to be reelected, and there's no doubt about it.
Uh-huh.
And he went through in his article, he was talking about the reason was because he's the one who offers the most largesse from the government. He's going to increase the dole. There's so many people that are depending on that, or want to get their place at the federal feed that they're going to vote on.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there may have been other issues involved as well, but that no doubt is a major one.
Well, Mike, this is why I believe that you're absolutely correct. If we're going to get this country back on track, then what we're going to have to do is to withstand. We're going to have to get rid of the moral decay in our country, because if the moral decay stays there, people are still going to have this gimme attitude, because the old man in us is trying to prevent pain and pursue pleasure. And the preventing of pain is, man, it's a hand out rather than a hand up. And I think it makes it very easy for them. So back to you, sir.
The reason the politicians keep getting reelected is because, well, there's a lot of reasons.
Uh-huh.
That an incumbent has probably about an 80% advantage over a newcomer.
Uh-huh, yep.
Because they spend their whole time politicking rather than taking care of the issues of the country. in my opinion, but the thing that people do is they continue to vote for whoever promises them the biggest piece of the federal pie.
That's exactly right.
And that's a disgrace upon the people. And that's one reason the people get the government they deserve, because they're not interested in freedom. They're interested in a free handout.
That's exactly right.
And nobody's, you know, that's not popular to say, because a lot of people say, well, you're insulting the people. Well, all you're doing is telling the truth, and if it insults the people, they need to be humble, recognize that that's the case. You can't have freedom if you don't have people who are self-reliant.
Yeah.
And people aren't self-reliant anymore. They've been, especially as the younger people who have been educated, that what's really important is your self-esteem, and you're really a victim, and you deserve to get something from the government. This whole mentality has fostered this idea of, okay, who am I going to vote for? Who's going to give me the biggest piece of pie? And it's out in the, it's not even hidden. It's blatant. It's rank right before our eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't even notice it. They don't even think that something is dreadfully wrong in this picture, because they've been brainwashed by the media. Mm-hmm. They don't know the Bible. They don't know the Constitution.
Yeah. Well, if it appears to me as though, even though Mark Levin is right, I talk about the cultural change that needs to take place, the educational change, and then the structural change. And unless we have the moral change in our country, and what we need to be looking for is people flocking to doctrinal-type churches to get the Word of God. And if they don't do that, there's not going to be a moral change in this country.
Well, the government, unfortunately, rather than trying to foster morality in society, is doing just the opposite. We have our own president that not only here in our country supports and is a cheerleader for homosexuality, goes around the world and trying to promote it.
Yeah, I understand.
And the media doesn't cover this. When he was in Africa and he was trying to promote it, they said, don't try to peddle that here because we don't want it. But you never hear about that. You get it through the internet or through articles and so forth.
Sure, sure.
Okay, let's see. Do we have time to do the next little paragraph here?
Oh, yeah, sure. We got about 10 minutes, and I think we're at we ought in the first place.
We ought in the first place to be grateful to the all-wise disposer, capital D, of events, who has given us so great a portion of our political happiness. To possess such a country with the blessing of liberty and peace, together with the security of person and property, which results from a well-ordered, efficient government, is, or ought to be, a matter of constant thankfulness.
That's 180 out of what really is.
Well, I'll go ahead and read what I say about it.
Okay.
Today, who in their right mind would say that our government is well-ordered and efficient? How many of you remember LBJ's Great Society?
Yep.
Two main goals of his plan for social reform were to eliminate poverty and curb racial injustice. Billions were spent on high-rise government housings for the poor and busing children to achieve a racial balance in education. Both were colossal failures. Efficient governments do not carry a $17 trillion national debt.
Yeah.
Now, I remember very well the LBJ Great Society.
Yeah.
This was during the 60s. And not only was his Great Society just carrying forth even to a much higher level what Franklin D. Roosevelt started, and it was the New Deal. Both were absolutely disastrous because both were were against the Constitution. Nowhere does the Constitution give, it didn't give FDR, it didn't give Lyndon Baines Johnson the authority to do things for the people that they should do them for themselves. And Judge Napolitano, you're familiar with him?
Absolutely.
What's his first name? Anyway, Judge Napolitano wrote a book, It's Dangerous to Be Right When the Government is Wrong. And in that, he explains and he details how we went from where the races were going to be able to acclimatize to one another and be able to work their issues out, but it's the government that came in and separated the races for a period of time, mm-hmm. separate but equal and so forth, and then they came in and they were forcing that issue to separate. Then they came back in and changed their mind and said, now we're going to force them to integrate.
Yeah.
If they would have just stayed out of the whole kit and caboodle, they wouldn't have had all the disaster that we have. And here we have LBJ, which is was the cheerleader. He was the one that was forcing this issue, trying to have equality, force it upon the people.
Yes, uh-huh.
It's just like Obamacare being forced on the people. Now, nobody wanted it, and it was a colossal failure, not only in the trillions of dollars that were poured down a rat hole. They've tore down all this government housing, and now they even admit that the busing was a total disaster.
Yeah.
Education was just went down tremendously because they didn't care about education. The only thing that they cared about was how many black kids are sitting by how many white kids.
Uh-huh. See, it was the socialization of the races, Mike, and that's why I encourage people to read Who Killed Excellence, because all this goes hand in glove with the moral decay, the educational decay. Paved the way for us not to understand what was going on with the structural decay. And Mike, I remember a time, and I'm sure that Dub and Joyce Blackwood, maybe Keith Twiggs, who's on with us today, these are people that are in their 80s. And even I, in my late 70s, I remember my high school was 4 miles from my house. And I walked a half a mile down to the main highway in sleet, snow, rain, sunshine, fog that you couldn't see from one telephone to the telephone pole to the next. I walked a half a mile and hitchhiked to and from school every day.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yes. Yes.
Huh. Well, unfortunately, hindsight's 20/20.
Yes.
But this whole thing is because government is interfering in areas they have no business getting involved in,
mm-hmm.
and trying to force equality.
Yep.
And so, and doing things that are all this was unconstitutional, and they always couch it in we need to do this because this is the what's the term. It's the loving and thoughtful thing to do.
Yeah.
Well, I don't care what anybody says about what's thoughtful and loving and the charitable thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not in the Constitution, you can't do it.
That's right.
And once, I don't think FDR was the first one to get off on this track. In fact, I know he was. It goes all the way back to Wilson.
Well, he goes a little further than that. He goes back to Teddy Roosevelt before him and his square deal.
Right, his square deal. And then you had FDR with a new deal. Then you have LBJ with the Great Society.
Absolutely.
And you had, what was one of the Bushes had the, what was it, the...
something, but I forget what it was too. But it
anyway,
was,
when
yeah.
they have these titles, you just want to run. You just want to not have anything to do with it. All of it has to do with going outside of the Constitution.
The Constitution.
And what started this was Ramsey's comment on how thankful they were that they had a well-ordered and efficient government.
Yes.
Well, anytime you get into what you might call the bleeding heart society or a government that starts spending money, government doesn't have any money, by the way. They have to take it from somebody else to come or else print it or else borrow it.
That's right.
And when they do that in order to make life better, all they do is make it worse, because they take away your freedom. They can't do that without taking away your freedom.
Absolutely.
And what goes, of course, with that is talking about taking your money. When they take away your money, they're taking away your freedom. I lived through this era, and I'm sure most of the people listening probably did as well. It's still very vivid in my mind, and it was a social disaster. You know, the 60s were a time where you had the Vietnam War raging. You had all this racial strife because the government was interfering with the normal course of people interacting with each other. And you had the Watts riots. You had riots going on. You had the hippies. You had the drug scene. Do you remember all that?
Do I remember all that? I worked at a place called, I was working at the... at a tire factory building tires, and I came out of the building at midnight when the shift was over, and our parking lot was inside a gate that was about 100 yards away, and we were having riots at that point in time, and this company was in a bad section of town, and had one policeman that was a guard, and he wouldn't go to the gate. Where the cars were parked because of the riots that were going on in that area. Breaking windows, fires, the whole 9 yards. And I said, you know what? I gotta go to school in the morning. I'm going out. He said, don't go out. I said, I've got to go. Mike, I walked that 100 yards, went inside the gate, and the only way in and out of that was through this gate. And when I walked inside the gate, got in about 10 yards, three black men walked from behind a building and came into that lot with me, and I had a book in my hand that was a college book, and when they walked in, I stopped and faced them, and they reached down and picked up stones. I wasn't 10 yards away from them, wasn't closer than that, maybe 10 steps away from them, and all three of them threw rocks at me, and I put a book in front of my face in order to block the stone from hitting me in the head, and they threw three stones at me, all three missed, and turned around and walked away. I got in my car and left.
Well, to say the least, LBJ's Great Society went up in flames big time.
Uh-huh.
And I can't imagine, you know, that's just one, I'm sure one event that is vivid in your mind about that happening. And when you live through that, you don't easily forget it, do you?
No, no, not at all. No, I thank the Lord for protecting me. I mean, listen, they could pretty near spit on me. And they threw three rocks at me. And by the way, this is not a racial thing because it was black men. It just so happens it was the race riots that were going on at that point in time. I was a white man. And they weren't going to let me go. Why they didn't throw more, why they didn't attack me, I have no idea except for the fact that God was in this and protected me. You're going to reach down nearly, reach out and touch me. But all three of them missed me when they threw those rocks. And I turned around and walked back to my car. They went, and I drove home. Yep.
Well, I'm sure people, the younger ones, caught the brunt of the integration into the schools. And I would recommend Judge Napolitano's book.
Yes.
It's dangerous to be right when the government is wrong. And read the sections in his book that deal with the integration and how you go back there every time. It's the government that's the culprit for interfering in areas they have no business getting involved in.
Well, Mike, this was the purpose of those who killed excellence and those in the field of education that wanted to kill the excellence in school was to bring about the socialist state, but they had to boil the frog over a long period of time, and they used behavioral psychology to dumb down the people and change the curriculum from teaching reading, writing, arithmetic, rather than educate. It was socialization of the races, period.
Right.
That was
right.
It.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, once again, brother, we've done it. We've blown a full hour, okay?
It sure seemed to go by faster.
Yes, it did. Well, we'll come back next week to back then. Ramsey continued to describe what our country was like, okay?
Okay. Appreciate again you having me on today.
Oh, man, listen, I had a thought this morning. I heard you yesterday indicate how many times you're teaching, you're here on the radio with me now, then you're teaching two or three times a week, and you've got your two worship services on Tuesday and Thursday and one on Sunday. Listen, if you ever get to the point where you feel like too much is going on in my life, that is in your life, and you wanna let go of this, you just tell me. I want you, brother. But if
I just enjoy it too much.
Okay.
Since last Sunday, I've spoke every day of the week somewhere.
I know.
Including today.
I understand, pal.
Tomorrow I will. It's the same same schedule, but the Lord gave me the strength to do it, and I just love doing it. So.
Okay,
well,
that's fine.
I appreciate that comment anyway.
Okay, pal. Well, listen, we'll see you next week, same time, same station. God bless you.
Thanks a lot.
And talk to you later. Bye-bye now. Okay, I've just stopped my recording here, and I want to thank all who are logged on with us, and I'm going to let you go now in 30 seconds, and if Mike, if you happen to be listening, let me encourage you to tell your man who is starting and stopping your encoder to shut your mic. Once you shut off your mic, he doesn't need to stop the encoder immediately. Needs to wait about 30 seconds because there's a 30-second delay, but when you shut down the encoder, it'll cut off what you said during that delay period. So in order to get everything that you say before you shut your mic off, he needs to wait at least 30 seconds before he shuts down the encoder, okay? Okay, thank you folks for being with me today. I'll be back on in about an hour and 10 minutes with IQ Al Razuli, and we'll be talking about Islam 101 and whatever current issues are going on today in the world regarding Islam, okay? That's an hour.